Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Paranormal UK Radio Network, the best in paranormal talk radio in the UK and around the world.
Hey, everybody. We're here, alive and thrive, in Toronto, the most culturally diverse city in the world. Home of Blue Jays, Raptors, Maple Leafs, and Canadian psychic Robert Lindsay Milne. That's me. Welcome to my side of the crystal ball. My guest tonight is Jim Harold. So who's Jim Harold, you say? Well, that's what I said just a little while ago. I first met Jim. My publicist arranged for me to be on his podcast a year ago, September. It was one of the first ones I appeared on when I was coming out of my semi-retirement. I was struck with his manners, his politeness, the respect that he showed, the obvious intelligence, and the low-key way he went about his work and his interviews. It was a respectful interview, and I was really impressed with the professionalism of it. In fact, quite surprised for a podcast. A little while later, like just a few weeks ago, I was booked on his show again. And once again, I had the same feelings. And at the end of the show, I asked Jim, would he come on my side of the crystal ball? And he agreed. I had no idea his background. And did you know that since 2005 up until now, well, first of all, Jim is a pioneer in his field of paranormal podcasts. And since 2005 and up until now, his shows, his videos, his work have been downloaded 60 million times. I know, 60 million. So we're going to be talking to Jim throughout the whole show. And Jim, of course, is in the expert's chair tonight. Before we do, though, have a couple of requests. If you're watching us on YouTube, please like, comment, and subscribe. You know, recently we went past the 1,000 subscriber mark, and that got us some ratings. So please subscribe some more. It will help us get higher and higher in the ratings, and then we can do more and better shows. If you can also find us on Apple, Spotify, and pretty much anywhere else, you would be hearing your podcast. If you would like to get in touch with me personally, you can find me on my website, www.robertlindsaymilne.com. You can also find me on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. And now, without further ado, let's start off with WWRS. In our last episode, in WWRS, I was talking about how can you do a reading for somebody when you're in Toronto and they're in Australia. And what I did is I started off with sharing how I learned how to do those things before I knew what those things were, what they would be called. I just simply learned how to do those things. And the way that I learned how to do it was I just did it. So I came up with an idea. Can I do a reading? If I can do a reading for somebody in front of me, could I do a reading for somebody on the telephone? And I explained how all that happened. And then I thought, okay, if I can do a reading on the telephone, could I do a reading on the telephone on the radio for someone? And again, the only way to find out was to go on the radio, be on the telephone, and do a psychic reading. And that's how it happened. So I still didn't figure out what it was, what I was doing. There were no words in those days that would describe what I was doing. And most people were astonished by being able to do a psychic reading on how could you do that? Because everyone, and me too, in those days was thinking outwardly. So, of course, somebody in Australia, you can't tune into them just by looking out. What you have to do is look inward. Now, I didn't think about going inward. I just did what I did naturally. I tuned inward, looked inward, and tuned it there. No, and I didn't even realize that I was doing that. So I did lots of readings on the telephone, got practiced, and then I did psychic readings after that on the telephone, on the radio, and continued doing it for a long time. And I stretched that talent. So now we come back to here we are. How do you describe that? I tune into. Well, what do I tune into? I tune into myself. But you see, I, like everything on the planet, I suppose everything in the universe, but everything on this planet, we're all connected. We're connected with all the living beings on the planet. We're all intertwined. We're connected with all the parts of the planet. And in order for us to get to a part of the planet, we can just simply look inward rather than going there physically outward. When two people are in tune, connected, you don't have to be in front of them. You'll use the same technique of doing a reading or connecting in front of somebody as you'll do looking inward, connecting and being psychic that way, because they're both the same. I remember my friend George, remember my mentor from 40 plus years ago. In one of his lectures, he started off with, in psychic things, there is no distance. Because there isn't. Because you're not outward, you're inward. So that does, you know, that was hard to understand back in those days. We still had to dial the telephone. It was still attached to the wall. Is very different than today. So another way to say, how can you do a reading for somebody when they're not in front of you? In psychic things, there is no distance. On the internet, there is no distance. So we can talk to somebody in Australia from Toronto, or we can talk to somebody across the street, online, on like Zoom video. We can talk to them, and it takes the same amount of time, the same amount of effort to see someone in Australia as it does in Toronto. And it just once again proves that we are all connected, and we are all one. And when we pray, we go inward. When we think, when we go inward. When we feel, we go inward. It all comes from within. And when things come through us, they first come from within. So how can you do a psychic reading for somebody in Australia if you're in Toronto or Montreal or New York or anywhere? Simply go inward, tune into those feelings that you would feel if they were in front of you. It really is that simple. And that's what Robert has to say today. It's 2005. Let's imagine it's the autumn of 2005, 17 years ago, and all of a sudden, you decide you're going to do a podcast, and 17 years later, your podcast, the Paranormal Podcast, and Jim Harold's Campfire has been downloaded 60 million times. Your shows are in the top 1% of the most successful, the most watched, and the most viewed. Imagine if I would have done a reading for you in September of 2005, and I would have said those things to you. What would you have said?
I'd say, whoa. are you sure you need to polish the crystal ball a little bit there?
Yeah.
I'm not too sure of that. No, the thing is that now I one minor correction, more listened to, because my shows are primarily...
I understand. I understand you're listened to. Okay.
Right. But I do some things on YouTube, but just it's more of a kind of dabbling than it's been anything serious. But I would have been shocked.
Yeah.
To know that I've had the opportunity now for 10 years, in June will be 10 years I've been able to do this full time as my profession. That would have blown me away. And then the fact, the numbers you mentioned, yeah, I would have been, as our British friends say, I would have been gobsmacked.
Do you think, eh?
Yeah.
Wow. So where did you come up with this idea? Because, you know, I'm thinking back to 2005, and I'm thinking of the computer that I had like 8 gigabytes hard drive, you know, and everyone's going, whoa, you know. So how did that happen?
Well, I had worked, I'd gone to school for broadcasting.
Okay.
And it was going to be, my primary focus was actually television. And back in the day, really before the internet took hold, I started to go out into the work world in the early 90s. They always said, hey, get call letters on your resume. If you want to work in radio or television, work at any station you can get into, sweeping the floor, whatever.
Right.
So I ended up working at a radio station. And as life often happens to you, I started looking around, and I was a sales assistant, so I helped.
So this wasn't like in WABC AM in downtown New York, Manhattan,
that was
right?
In Cleveland, yeah. Which is actually a major radio market, but it's not, sure, New York. It's not Louisville,
right.
Los Angeles.
Right.
And but I was at a classical music station, so it wasn't a top rated station, but very accomplished in its field, though I think maybe the first station ever on the internet, strangely enough. But anyhow, I started looking around, and it's like, well, the salespeople make this much, and the on air people make this much, and yeah, I get to write commercials and do fun stuff. Maybe I'll just try the sales thing out for a while. Well, I worked there for a while as a salesperson, was pretty successful, went to other stations, did not like it, but I was kind of into it. You know, when you get you're like, I got to do this, because by that time I picked up a fiance who became a wife. We had 2 kids. So in the time frame you're talking about, 2005, I am a salesperson for a radio station. Actually, I had gone back to that station as a salesperson for a second time. I had 2 kids. I had a mortgage, married, a younger father. And it's like, I couldn't just go off to Paducah and chase my dream of broadcasting.
Sure.
I was in my 30s at that point. So it's like, this is never going to happen for me. And then I heard about this thing called podcasting. I heard a guy who used to be on MTV, Adam Curry, he started podcasting. And Leo Laporte, who was a great tech journalist. And I always loved talk radio. I started listening to them online, and I listened to them. I was like, oh my gosh, these guys are trained, longtime broadcasters. I could never do what they do. But then I heard there were people doing these shows themselves, these podcasts. And I said, well, I can't do what those guys are doing, but I can do what these other people are doing. And to your point about the old computer, I had like a crummy computer I built myself, a Windows computer. It had, I think I had a $30 headset, which at that point with my economics was a stretch for me. I just started doing it for fun. And the way I came upon the idea for the show was, you know, as a kid, I grew up with In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy. And
oh, yes.
I always, of course, listened to Coast AM with the great late Art Bell and so forth. And I didn't see hardly anything out there in terms of, I mean, podcasts were brand new. They really kind of started in 2004, I would say. This was 2005. Nobody knew what they were. And I said, you know, I'll do this and it'll just be for fun. You know, I'll do a couple shows, you know, a month, and I'll just do this for fun. If I can't be a professional broadcaster, I can do this for my own enjoyment. Plus, I picked the paranormal because I couldn't really add anything in politics. You can't do music, sports. I mean, what am I going to add? What do I know about sports? But when it comes to the paranormal, in some ways, I believe none of us are really, truly experts. We're all seekers. We're all trying to find the way. And I was just a guy trying to find his way and talk to some of the great thinkers. So I did that show, and lo and behold, people started to listen.
This was the Paranormal Podcast, right? That's the original.
Which I still do to this day.
That's the one that I've been on.
Yeah. And it's also, the thing is that it's also a situation where I got to interview great people who knew a lot more about this stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's one of those things where I was amazed that I was able to get these people. It was so early, people would say, like I got Stanton Friedman, who was really the guy who broke open the Roswell case, the Roswell UFO case. I got people like Lloyd Auerbach, who is a great parapsychologist. And I was getting these great guests, and they had no idea what a podcast was. It's like, a pod what? What is this?
Sure.
My professional situation changed. I got a managerial job, so I had less time to dedicate, but I still kept a hand in it. And then 2008, I had gotten a job. I thought, this is the job. This is going to be the dream job that's going to catapult me to whatever, management or whatever, at a higher level. And I had been there for 3 or 4 months, and I thought, you know, I don't know that this is going to be the job that catapults me. This was 2008. And I'll never forget, I was sitting at my daughter's T-ball game listening to another podcast, which I don't know if that makes me a bad dad or a good dad. But anyway, and I heard somebody had a sponsor. And I thought to myself, you know, I really ought to try this, because people keep asking. I've been a while since I published a show, and I said, you know, I really ought to get serious about this. So I said, I told my wife, for 6 months, I'm going to put out a show every single week, and we'll see what happens. At the end of that 6 months, I got my first sponsor, and then more and more people started tuning in. Then I started Jim Harold's Campfire, which is my most successful podcast. Started that in 2009. That's where people call in with their experiences. And honestly, I think that's where I provide the most value, is through that show. And it grew and it grew. And in 2012, I told my wife, I said, I think I want to quit my full-time job and give this a go full-time. And bless her, she gave me the green light, and I did it. And neither of us have ever regretted it. The shows grow. I mean, I'm not, to use a name that everybody's familiar with these days, I'm not Joe Rogan. I'm not to that level. I'm not independently wealthy, but I make a living for my family. And I hope that I provide some good information, some good entertainment, some good thought-provoking material for people, because I think so many of us struggle with these questions. You know, what's the afterlife about? What is this UFO thing all about? What are ghosts? I don't know that I've ever come up any with our hard and fast answers, but I think even having the conversation is a good thing. And most importantly, having a place for people to share their experiences pretty much unfiltered. I don't say make it spooky or make it scary.
Sure.
I say, tell me your story. And that's it. And I think that's really important to be authentic to people's experiences and not try to gin them up or those kind of things. Just tell me what happened to you. And they do. And that, which I thought was going to be a nice little side podcast, has really been the one that's my most popular and I think resonates with people the most. Jim Harrell's Campfire.
The Campfire. Now, you've also written 5 books. Or now is there six?
Well, I'm working on six. I got to get 6 out. But they've been compilations of what I think are some of the best, most outstanding campfire stories. And what we do is we basically take the transcriptions of those and we clean them up and write them in story form. But we don't embellish them and we don't add things. And that's what we've done with 5 of those books. Each book has about 70 stories in it.
Does any stories just come to mind? What is one of the more fascinating stories that you've heard on?
I think the most fascinating story is a little bit lengthy, but I think it's worth it.
Please.
It's from a listener by the name of T.I. Up in Michigan, and she's still a listener. And actually, you could see this on YouTube. Prior to the pandemic, I felt so strongly about her story. Is I'm in Ohio. I traveled up to Michigan with a videographer, and we did a segment with her, and her story has never changed. I think she probably told this story, oh gosh, had to be at least 10 years ago, if not longer. And her story is that her and her friend, she was up, she's originally from Michigan, but she was visiting Wisconsin. She went with a friend. They went to see a band, and it was kind of in a very kind of rural area. So they went off, they watched this band, they closed the place, and they were musicians as well. So they were talking with the band about gigs and different things, because I guess she came up to this area every summer. And they got ready to leave, and it was her and her friend Bob. And they were driving, and they had about an hour to go till they got back to the they must have been staying at a campground or something. So anyway, she gets a few minutes down the road and she says, you know, I've really got to go to the restroom. And Bob says, well, you know, it's 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. There's not going to be anything open. There's always the bushes.
Right.
And she said, no, that's how. OK, just drive fast. So they go down the road a little bit and they see this bar, this roadhouse. I had a big sign said the Roadhouse Saloon. But the weird thing was, this is after 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, bars are supposed to be closed then, but it was wide open. And there were cars in the parking lot, neon signs. You could tell the place was open. They said, hey, let's not look a gift horse in the mouth. Let's go in there. So she went in and she was talking to her friend Bob as they were going and said, glad I'm here, Bob said, because he's an artist. And said, they have a mural, I've heard, like an Old West mural, where they have cowboys and this saloon scene. And I've heard a lot about, but I've never seen it. So anyway, they go in. T.I. goes to the restroom, comes back. Bob has gotten them a couple of beers. And they're talking, and everybody's looking at them kind of strangely, kind of like with a blank expression, kind of almost smiling, kind of like this. And I thought, that's very odd. So then there's an old Wurlitzer jukebox, a bubbler jukebox with vinyl on it. You know,
I remember them. Guy. Yep. Yeah.
And a gentleman comes up to T.I. and he smiles, and she said all of his teeth were rotten, and he asked her to dance. And T.I. walked with a cane, and she showed him a cane and said, I don't dance a lot. And she said she was thankful she had that cane to beg on.
Lean on, as it were. Yeah.
Yeah. So he went and he played Chubby Checker's Let's Twist Again on the jukebox. And that'll come into play a little bit later. And they're looking around and they're looking at this mural, and something peculiar they notice, that everybody in the mural looks like a real person in the bar. There's kind of a woman who looks like a dance hall girl, to use an expression, mm-hmm. an olden expression. And there's a woman right there who looks just like there. There's a couple of guys at a table playing cards in the mural. And there's a couple of guys sitting at the table who look just like these guys. And I thought, well, you know what? The artist probably was a regular here. These are probably regulars. This is an homage to them. So anyway, there's these swinging doors in the picture, like from the old Western movies, if you remember those, where the gunslinger walks in and says, I want to see the sheriff, or whoever he wants to see and shoot. And they were talking about, and the place just had a weird vibe. Again, the people kind of blankly staring, looking at them, but not talking, not engaging, just kind of weird. And they noticed something when they're looking at the mural at those doors. They noticed like a couple misty columns, but they didn't notice that when they came in. And they go back to talking a little bit more, and they look back up, and the columns are there that weren't there before, but now they're more defined. One is significantly taller than the other. And you think, that's weird. Did you see that when you came in? No, I didn't see that. And then they look back up, and it's developing like a Polaroid picture almost, if you remember those, a man and a woman. And the man is significantly taller than the woman. They notice the woman has curly hair. T.I. has curly hair. Then they know the woman has boots on. And T.I. has boots on. And then they notice
I'm getting a shiver down my neck. I don't know why.
Then they notice the woman has a cane.
Yeah.
And T.I. has a cane. They realize that they're seeing themselves develop into the picture. And they said, okay, let's get out of here. They get up to go out. And the people start beckoning them back. Come back. Come back. And they go. Now, that would be weird, but it gets weirder. Mm-hmm. So they close the door. T.I. says there's like darkness and the place is totally closed up. And when they turn around to go back into the parking lot, they're not cars. There is a car. The car they came in, and they get out of there. Now, it gets even stranger. T.I., being a much braver soul than I am, she said, you know, nobody believes me. I'm telling my friends and family about this. They think I'm, you know, imagining things. I'm going to go back. So I think she got a friend or a sister one night, and it wasn't 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. They went 7 or 8 at night. And they went in. And she saw a woman there tending bar, and she came in and started talking to her. She said, I was here the other night, you know, it was the joint was jumping. There are a lot of people here. Said, man, there was this really good looking, strong, strapping young bartender behind the bar, muscles, you know, looked like he said, an Iowa farm boy, that kind of thing. And the girl said, I'm sorry, but the only people that bartend here are me and my elderly father. And then T.I. thought, well, that's weird. And then she sees a jukebox. But the only thing that was weird, Robert, is that it was not a Wurlitzer jukebox with vinyl in it. It was a modern jukebox with CDs. And, oh, no Chubby Checker, no Let's Twist Again. And with that, T.I., decided to leave, and she left the Mystery of the Roadhouse Saloon forever. Now, here's the kicker to that even. This place exists.
Yes.
And I have had people send me photos of it, and there is a mural. It's a real place. So that's maybe the most memorable campfire story we've ever had. It really does sound like something out of the Twilight Zone. Now, some of the, and not all the stories are like that. Most of them not. Most of them are much simpler, but that that stood out.
So what is Tia? Is that her name, Tia?
T.I.
What does she think that was about? Or what do you think that was about?
Well, I think when we talked, I mean, the only thing we could come was like some kind of portal, you know, to another reality or something. Had she stayed there, could she have been stuck with those people? I think that's some speculation she had. I don't know.
That was one of my thoughts.
What I do think, and doing the campfire show, and at this point it's thousands of stories because we've done, I think I just put out, I'm trying to remember the exact number, the 543rd episode last week. So you figure every show has multiple stories. So I've literally heard thousands of stories. But kicking this around all this time, hearing all these stories, I believe reality is a lot stranger than we realize sometimes. And that, you know, it's like in the old days, people used to believe in ether, or they may have believed in things that didn't particularly make sense, but they didn't pick up on things that did make sense. For example, DNA has always existed. People back in the day didn't know it existed. So I do believe in a spiritual world. I believe that is a real thing. But I also think that we don't quite have the reality of reality down, if you know what I'm saying.
I think so.
Yeah. Reality is strange. And what's really going on in the universe, I think, is stranger than we realize.
Do you believe in other type of worldly beings? So were these people in that bar, were they worldly beings that were there at 3 o'clock in the morning? Worldly beings, meaning being different than, say, human, but look like them or look like us. I've recently interviewed someone who does deals with fairies and things like that, and I was just wondering, are they worldly? You know, worldly beings aren't human; they're a different race, but they could look like us.
I'd never thought about that. I thought more like it was an alternate reality or something.
Okay,
and, that there had been. You know, I had a story one time of somebody who was a little kid, and this is a very simple short story, but they were across the street from him in McDonald's. This is probably 20 years ago when she was a little kid. And she walks, she's running to the McDonald's because she's a little kid and she wants a milkshake. And all of a sudden she runs into this very kind of taciturn looking man with a top hat that looked like he was out of time. And he just looked at her like someone you would see in a movie, kind of like the way I pictured it. If you remember that old actor, John Carradine, have a top hat and look just very angry when she ran into him and looked at him. And then she ran by and looked back and he was gone. So sometimes I wonder if we like cross with these other realities. Maybe they're human, but if they're from another time or place. And another person call in who has been a listener to the show for years, who said that basically she was walking one day and she walked into another reality that was of a past time in the same neighborhood and everything, and then walked just as easily back into this reality. So sometimes I think that weird things happen where there are portals and things to other times or maybe alternate universes. You know, a lot of scientists believe that the multiverse is a real thing. So those are possibilities. But I hate to say this, Robert. I have done thousands of shows. I mean, if you count all the different shows I do, it's been over 2,000 episodes, probably closer to 2,600 episodes. I don't know. And it's annoying, but I think sometimes you have to live with the mystery of it. It's a tough thing.
I don't think anybody knows. Even those that do it, I don't think they really know what they're doing. They're just as you've done all these podcasts, you've received all this information, all these experiences. And when you put it all together, you just don't know. Well, one day our essence, or not, one day our essence will leave this body and then we'll go to another level, I think. And when we do, then we'll see and know these things, or we may not go anywhere. Because nobody really knows exactly what's going to happen when we have shuffled off our mortal coil.
Right.
And I realized that a long, long time ago. And, when I was coming to terms with what God was. And then I realized one day that, hey, wait a minute, nobody's really come back as themselves. So we don't know what happens after we die. We have ideas and we have what we want and want it to be, but we really don't know.
And
it was at that point that I said, then my guess is just as good as is about anybody else's. So I'm just going to follow what I believe.
Right. That makes sense to me. And I do believe in an afterlife. I mean, if you look at flipping on my interviewer hat, mm-hmm. one of my favorite subjects is that of near-death experiences. And the hardcore skeptics who think totally materialistically that our brain is physical, 100, and our mind is physical, and that when you die, you're dead and you just have a big dirt nap. Where I think that falls apart just on a common sense level, for example, is the near-death experience. Now, people who have the near-death experiences, many of them report the things like the tunnel of light, the life review, so forth and so on, which, I don't want to discount. But here's the thing that gets me that says there really is something to this, not just the hallucinations of a dying brain and dopamine and different chemicals being released. When somebody flatlines and they quote die, and then they come back and then they say, well, there was a medical team of three people working on me, and they were doing this and they were doing this and they were doing this. But all the things that experiencer reports seeing happened while they were dead or unconscious. How do they see that? How do they know that? And those are the kind of things that I think, just from a common sense point of view, it's not even faith, to me, says, yes, there is an afterlife. What it is, I don't know. I mean, kind of my hope is, what I hope for is the great reunion, and have a family picnic with everybody.
Wouldn't that be?
Before. Yeah, that'd be a beautiful thing.
Wouldn't that be?
But I don't know if that's what happens. Another thing that interests me, I don't know if I, quote, believe in it, but it does intrigue me, is reincarnation. If you look at the work of people done by the late Ian Stevenson or Jim B. Tucker from the University of Virginia, some very, very compelling cases about past life experiences and so forth. So that's certainly food for thought. So there's a lot out there. And I'm more convinced than ever that the other realms exist. I'm less certain of what they are, if I could kind of put it in a nutshell.
There's a fellow that he's a scientist. He is a media guy now, but he's PhD, and he got his PhD in studying bats. But I forget his first name. His last name is Rifkin, and he appears on a lot of the big radio stations, and he does these little capsule comments. And I was listening to him the other day, and he was talking about an experiment that accidentally happened where somebody had died, but they had an EEG they were attached to. It was just a coincidence. And after this human had died, their body was no longer working, their heart, and they'd gone into decay, their brain continued to process information. Even though the physical body was dead, the body wasn't getting any oxygen or any feed, but the brain continued to process. And almost like the brain was programmed to process what had been experienced through its entire life, even though the physical body was dead. And then they started doing more experiments. Now, there's no conclusive results, but it appears that many times when someone has died, their brain continues to function, even though they're not breathing and the physical body actually is decaying, but the brain continues to send or it appears like in the part of the brain where it's doing a thinking and an assessment.
Right. Well, it's interesting to me is the idea that your brain, there's the brain and then there's a mind. And the closest analogy that I can use is your computer. Okay, I have a computer here that has its own capabilities if it's disconnected from the internet. However, you connect it to the internet, it really expands and can do so much more. And I kind of wonder, and this is not an original thought. I think Terje Simonsen has talked about this, but the idea that and many other people, that your brain and your universal mind, or some people call it the spiritual internet or something, I think Terje called it. But the idea of the two work in concert. And that makes a lot of sense to me. And maybe what happens is, and to your point, maybe in that scenario, is it possible that the contents of your brain are being uploaded to the metaphysical cloud, as it were? You know what I'm
saying? Well, that is what the implication was.
Yeah.
That is what he was saying. There just wasn't enough scientific proof for him to say this is exactly what happened, but he talked about that. And it was a way of measuring. And then one of the other interviewers or the host of the show said, what effect would that have if we were keeping somebody physically alive just to harvest their organs? Would that interfere at the end life process? And then that brought in all kinds of other topics for an early Monday morning, and they stopped it. But that was just something. So do you believe in everything, or do you just acknowledge that everything could exist? Or everything
it's probably
that you hear.
More the latter. I mean, the thing is that, and I used to remember before I started doing this, when I used to listen to somebody like an Art Bell or somebody, it's like, well, how can they believe in this stuff? And you can't, I don't think, you know, I've had everybody from folks who practice witchcraft, and I'm definitely not a witch, although that's somebody's right if they want to practice that. Just because I interview somebody about something doesn't mean I necessarily, it's my personal philosophy. But my role, and a lot of people will ask, well, aren't you a paranormal investigator? And I'm like, no, I'm not. And I don't want to be, because I want to have a certain arm's length distance from the subjects. Not that I can't be knowledgeable about them and know what the research says and talk, for example, talking to psychics, talking to someone like you. I'm very interested in what you experience and people like you, but that doesn't mean I want to be a psychic. My goal is to give a fair hearing to experiencers, definitely, first and foremost, and also authors, experts, psychics, give them a fair hearing and let them explain their theories and let the audience decide what they think on it. As far as my personal beliefs, you know, I can go down the list. I believe the afterlife is real. I believe that there's some phenomena. Cryptids, I definitely believe in underwater cryptids. Something like Bigfoot, a little bit less. I'm a little more skeptical, but I'm open to hearing other perspectives. Ghosts, yeah, I think they're real. Do I think there's good? I think there's good, and I think there's actually some evil out there, too.
Well, there has to be.
I think there's both, because I've talked to many of my friends more kind of in the New Age community, and they've got some great things to share. But some people say, well, there's no such thing as evil because it's just a lower vibration. And I personally disagree with it. I mean, we're seeing a lot of evil going on with Russia and
right
what
now,
Mr. Putin's doing.
Yes.
So evil is around in the world for sure. So
it has to be, because without evil, good cannot exist. There has to be what is one way positive. There has to be negative. Without each other, they don't exist.
Yeah, that's what I think. That's what I think. So, you know, for example, my background, I'm having a little bit of fun with some of the stuff in the background. It's real, by the way. It's no green screen, but
I thought it was real. I looked at it.
But the point being is I have fun with it, but I do take this stuff very seriously because it is serious. It's the nature of our existence. So, you know, I think it's important stuff, and I think it's just as important as the stuff that's in the headlines in the newspaper, so to speak. I think that, and we see with UFOs. I mean, now with the U.S. government coming out and saying, yeah, there might be something to this. You know, that's even greater implications. And scientists more and more saying, well, yeah, there probably is life elsewhere. Big stuff. We're talking about big stuff.
Do you have guests come from on from the dark side, or those that would be worshiping evil things, or like a Satanist, or you know, like the famous one was
LeVay?
Yeah.
I don't get into that. That's just a personal choice. I mean, I do believe in freedom of religion. You know, as long as you're not harming other people. But for my shows, I've stayed away from that.
Yeah. And you're just not into that negative side?
No.
Okay. Have you met anyone that on your shows that say or do miracles as you understand miracles?
Not so much. I'm very careful about medical things.
Well, miracles don't have to be medical.
I understand. Right.
Okay.
I understand that. I've had people who have experienced miracles.
Oh, yes. Have you?
I've experienced things where I thought there was divine intervention. I don't know if I would call them miracles.
What would be the difference then between a miracle?
That's a good point. It's a good point.
Okay.
One of my favorite, I'll tell you my favorite miracle story.
Okay. Yeah, please.
Kind of saved my life. I'm here in Ohio, and we have a big amusement park called Cedar Point, which is probably the foremost roller coaster park in the United States. Anyway, my wife and I, and she was my fiance at the time. This would have been 1994. She wasn't my fiance at the time. She was just my girlfriend at that point. And we decided we were going to go with some friends. So we went. It was a Saturday night. I dropped her back home, and it was like 2:00 in the morning. She said, and we'd just been dating for 3 or 4 months. And she said, you know, I'm going to ask she was living with her folks because she was going to grad school. She said, I'm going to ask my dad if you can sleep on the couch. I'm like, no, I barely know them. And no, it's like, she's, I'm going to ask, you're going to fall asleep. So anyway, I did it. And we got up in the morning and had a nice breakfast and everything. And I went back to my house. I was in the process of getting a new place, actually close to where she lived. But at that time it was in a little rougher part of town. Because that's kind of where I grew up, was in the rough part of town. And it was this old A-frame style house. And I pull up and I get out of my car. And the guy who lived in the back half of the house, the landlord's son, said, we got to talk. Because he was standing, pointing at the house. I'm like, oh, hey, how's it going? He's like, there's been a drive-by. I'm like, a drive-by shooting? Whose house got shot up? He said, our house got shot up. And I was not there that night because of a coincidence. And my I had one of those big double door refrigerators that an uncle gave me. Bullet through one side, bullet through the ketchup out the other side. I had a new microwave that took a direct hit and was a casualty. And the cop said, what's this guy who lives up here? What does he do? And I said, well, he works for a classical music radio station. And it was an AK-47, and it turns out that about 3:00 in the morning, some people were looking to hit the house next door. The house next door was light blue. Our house was dark blue. Somebody told them to hit the blue house. Under the amber-colored streetlights, our house looked blue, their house looked white, they got the wrong house.
Wow.
Now, I can't say with certainty if I would have been killed had I been there. But there's a chance. I mean, what if I'd gone down? Because all the rounds hit downstairs. I slept on the second floor. But who knows if someone was lying in wait looking for my motion? Who knows if I got thirsty and went downstairs to the kitchen to get a glass of water? Who knows? All I know, it was a very unusual circumstance for me not to be home that night. And that was the night that my place was riddled with machine gun fire. Now, again, the skeptics say, hey, you were just lucky, just a coincidence. I think someone somewhere pulled some strings that I wasn't there.
And then there's other possibilities that your girlfriend, soon to be wife at the time, was influenced to keep you there too.
Yep.
There's many possibilities, but someone was looking after Jim that night. That's for sure.
Yeah, you know, been looking like a piece of Swiss cheese. You know,
that's right.
It wouldn't have been good. And things like that. And that, see, Robert, here's where it gets tough for me. Mm-hmm. Why was I in that case spared, but somebody in another case is not? You know, that's where it gets tough.
Well, you know, it's really simple, Jim. Okay. Really, so it wasn't your time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's sense. About that. That's all it's going to be. Anything else is going to drive you crazy.
Because I think
your number wasn't up.
Yeah, I think about those people that during, you know, the awful tragedy of 9/11.
Well, their number was up.
Right, but you hear about the people who, I had a dental appointment.
Right.
My kids were running late for school, and they were saved. And then these other people weren't. It does seem arbitrary, but you're right. I think you're right in the end. I think that is the right read on it.
That is something that I have been doing for about 57 years. So, you know, like, and it really basically, you can drive yourself crazy trying to figure out what if, and really it wasn't their time or your time, and your mission was to do what you're doing as well as creating your family. And that's the reason.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I got to tell you, it's a mystery. And I think it's a pretty neat job I get to do. I mean, I love all the tech stuff.
Yeah.
I love the broadcasting part of it. I enjoy the business part of it. But I mean, you layer on top of this, I get to talk all day about these mysteries of life. I mean, what a gig.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Grateful.
I'm very grateful.
And that is being a success.
Yeah. Yeah. Am I Joe Rogan? Am I, because I hear all these people in podcasting, oh, this one signed $1 million deal. This signed a $2 million deal. But I just keep plugging along and doing my thing. And my audience, which really are the most important people, seem to enjoy it. And we grow every year. I think last year we grew by about 20%. It was massive, but you just, you know, I'm kind of like the tortoise, you know, I'm just slow and steady wins the race. And I do. And it's nice to be able to get, you know, for many years I did things that I didn't enjoy, you know, the sales stuff I wasn't crazy about, but to be honest with you, that has been invaluable. In the business side of what
Certainly.
We do with advertising and different things, you know, and that makes the fun part possible. If I hadn't had that experience, then I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. I wouldn't have been qualified to make it work. And I think sometimes some people call it God, some people call it the universe, that we are put in positions to prepare us for things that we don't yet understand.
I agree. And when we're put in those positions, there's no right or wrong choice, but the decision we make in that situation determines which way our life goes.
Right. That makes sense to me. That makes sense to me. Because, again, I remember cursing, you know, Cleveland, it gets cold, it gets snowy. I'm out here selling these ads. My cuffs are all wet.
Yeah.
You know, this is ridiculous. I've got my master's degree. Why am I doing all this? And then I'm like, be glad. Be glad you did that because so many lessons I learned and they were all pretty much totally transferable to doing this. And I wouldn't have had any of those without those hard times.
So how do people find you? Where can they get to your podcasts? How do they get to you?
Well, that's the beautiful thing, because now basically if anybody has a phone and any kind of audio apps, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, basically any audio app you have, You can listen. If you don't have a smartphone, you just, you know, you have a computer, jimharold.com. That's J-I-M-H-A-R-O-L-D.com. And you can find all my shows there. And, you know, if you are interested in hearing from experts in the field, like Robert, check out our shows. Also, experiencers and people just like you who experience something strange in their life. It could be ghosts, could be creatures, could be UFOs, or my favorite, what I call head scratchers. That's Jim Harold's campfire. And I hope everybody gets able to check out those free apps, jimharold.com, and on your favorite audio app.
You did it like a pro. You must have done this before.
I have a few times.
I am so grateful for this opportunity. Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. And bless you and all the listeners out there and viewers. Thank you very much.
That was just a fabulous interview today. I'd like to thank my guest, Jim Harold, for being on and sharing all his knowledge about podcasts and his awareness of how to do things in such a successful and professional way. Before we say goodnight, I have a couple of requests. If you're watching us on YouTube, please like, comment, and subscribe to our channel. It's really important if you subscribe. It gets us higher ratings in statistics, and that means we can have more shows and have more guests and continue this growing process. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, and pretty much anywhere else you find your podcast. If you're looking for me personally, you can find me on my website, www.robertlindsaymilne.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And now, just before I say goodbye, I have these words. Do good, stay safe, and above all, just be kind.